Hare Krishna. So, today, this morning, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, verses 10, 11, and 12. Why is the three verses, I hear you cry? Well, the reason is because of the wonderful initiations that took place yesterday. I have to put things in sync for tomorrow's class, and the devotees prepared for number 13, which leaves me with three, which I think is fine. But obviously, this is actually verse 12. So what I'll do, I'll go through 10 and 11, which are hardly very short purports, and then we'll get to the verse bit. I think that's fair enough. So I'll do verse 10 first. Please also explain the personality of Godhead, who lies in every heart as the Supersoul and as the Lord of all energies, but is untouched by his external energy. Prabhupada's purport. Undoubtedly, the form of the Lord, who was seen by Brahma, must be transcendental. Otherwise, how could he simply look upon the creative energy without being touched? It is understood also that the Purusha lies in the heart of every living entity. This also requires proper explanation. Text 11. O learned Brahman, it is formally explained that the planets of the universe, all the planets of the universe with their respective governors, are situated in different parts of the gigantic body of the Virat Purush. I have also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Virat Purush. But what is their actual position? Will you please explain that? So now we're on text 12, chapter 8 of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, and we're up to date now. Translation. Also, please explain the duration of life between creation and annihilation and all other subsidiary creations, as well as the nature of time, indicated by the sound of past, present, and future. Also, please explain the duration and the measurement of life of the different living beings known as the demigods, the human beings, etc., in different planets of the universe. Prabhupada's purport here. Past, present, and future are different features of time to indicate the duration of life for the universe and all its paraphernalia, including the different living beings in different planets. What I'll do, I'll quickly read out the English translation to the three verses as well, so we have it in context. Please also explain the personality of Godhead, who lies in every heart as the Supersoul and as the Lord of all energies, but is untouched by his external energy. O learned Brahman, it was formally explained that all the planets of the universe with their respective governors are situated in the different parts of the gigantic body of the Virat Purush. I've also heard that the different planetary systems are supposed to be in the gigantic body of the Virat Purush. But what is their actual position? Will you please explain that? Also, please explain the duration of time between creation and annihilation and that of the other subsidiary creations, as well as the nature of time, indicated by the sound of past, present, and future. Also, please explain the duration and measurement of life in the different living beings known as the demigods, the human beings, etc., in different parts of the universe. Om Agyanam Tiridam Dasha Janangala Shalakaya Jaksho Minisam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Garamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radhan Kanta Namushtate Tatsa Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishvare Vishubhanu Sute Devi Pranam Nami Hari Priye Vanta Kaupa Tarubhascha Kripa Simbudevacha Patitanam Pavanevriyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sasvati Devi Gurvani Pacharine Nivisesha Shunyavadi Vashachare Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Sorry. Okay. I spoke a little bit fast in the previous verses because I was just repeating what I already said, but I'll bear that in mind. Thank you. Okay. And if I go too fast, you just put your hand up, yeah? Okay, I'm in trouble. All right. Anyway, these three verses here, we can immediately tell, can we not? There's a lot in them. There's references to the universal form. There's references to the various Purusha avatars, different Vishnu incarnations there. Not incarnations, Purushas. As well as other things about the planets and Lord Brahma's lifetime and so forth. There's a lot there. And I don't think we can go into any one subject in any depth, but I will do what I can this morning. Because what happens is that you read the rest of the Bhagavatam, especially by the time you get to the fifth canto, and most of these questions in more detail are being answered. Especially the fifth canto, chapters 19 to about 29. It's all about the universe and the planets, and those who know me well know I'm fascinated by that. But if we turn to, first of all then, a little bit about the Purusha avatars, the Vishnu forms, we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela 2.52, translation in purport, so the verse is, superficially we see that these Purushas have a relationship with Maya, but above them, in the fourth dimension, is Lord Krishna, who has no contact with the material energy. Prabhupada's purport, the three Purushas, Karanadakshai Vishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and Shiradakshai Vishnu all have a relationship with the material energy, which is called Maya. Because through Maya, they create the material cosmos. These three Purushas, who lie on the Karana, Garbha, and the Shira oceans, the milk ocean in that case, respectively, are the super souls of everything that be. Karanadakshai Vishnu is the super soul of the collective universes. So that would be what we call also Mahavishnu, who's breathing the universes in and out of the pores of his skin. As Garbhadakshai Vishnu is the super soul of the collective living beings. Of course, Garbhadakshai Vishnu lies on the Garbha ocean. Garbha meaning womb or birth. And Shiradakshai Vishnu, who's lying on the ocean of milk, is the super soul of all the individual living entities. So I guess another word for that would be super soul, actually. The super soul. But the roles in these Vishnu Purusha avatars, Vishnu's coming down ultimately. His form is spiritual, but he has the role of maintaining the universes ultimately in these three different forms. And he expands. At the end of the day, he does things. How can we comprehend a humanoid form breathing in millions of universes at the pores of his skin? What to speak of how can we truly comprehend Vishnu being able to expand into each universe as Garbhadakshai Vishnu, then further expand into to accompany, actually, the soul in every, the jiva into every living being. It is incomprehensible to us, but this is the explanation. Something quite different, of course, just concentrating on this universe, is the Virat Purush, or the, how would you say, I think Prabhupada describes it as kind of like, almost like a material description, I think is, I got a nod there from Jaini Tai, which is usually a good sign. Jaini Tai Prabhu, sorry. That the the Virat Purush, or even the universal form, is almost like something that's personal and impersonal at the same time. We know that Arjuna witnesses the universal form in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I'll read a little bit out to you, but obviously just to get an idea of what that experience was like. Krishna says, "You cannot see me, Arjuna, with your present eyes. Therefore, I give you divine eyes. Behold my mystic opulence." Arjuna saw in that universal form of Krishna unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, unlimited wonderful visions. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and bore many divine upraised weapons. He wore celestial garlands and garments, and many divine scents were smeared over his body. All was wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, all-expanding. If hundreds of thousands of suns were to rise at once into the sky, their radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. Of course, Arjuna, bewildered and astonished, his hair standing on end, Arjuna bowed his head to offer obeisances and with folded hands began to pray to the Supreme Lord. He says, "Although you are one, you are spread throughout the sky and the planets and all space between, O Great One. Seeing this wondrous and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed." What happens after that, in the Gita, of course, is Arjuna says, "Actually, you know what? I prefer you as my friend. You know, that time I was feeding you sweets, I was massaging your feet. Yeah, that's okay. But this universal form, that is just my hairs on end, and stop it, please." You can imagine how absolutely the whole of the universe kind of presented to you in its material sense, all in one go, all in one place. Absolutely mind-blowing, actually. And as a surely that Arjuna said, "I prefer your personal form." So from that universal form came the forearm form of Vishnu. But actually, what did Arjuna want? The two-arm form of Krishna. So Krishna continued his transformation there before Arjuna's eyes, from the universal form to the Vishnu form, with the forearm, with the gada, the disc, the conch. But actually, the most desirable, most personal form, actually, one without so much awe and reverence, is that two-armed form of Lord Krishna with his flute. This is surely the most beautiful and attractive. But it is necessary in the scriptures that we understand that Krishna is more than a blue boy with a flute. Because look at these other forms. He maintains, as Vishnu, he is maintaining the creation. But look at this. Look at the universal form. But it's actually described, actually, that this is impersonal in the sense that it is a meditation. A meditation for those who are perhaps who struggle or who have been on the impersonal path. A meditation to understand the greatness of the personality of Godhead. Thus, chapter 11 of the Gita is very important in that context, because it's not easy to understand how can anybody be so powerful, in a sense. But actually, all of that power, all of that responsible for the creation and the annihilation and all the planetary systems and all the living beings within it are in some way coming from Lord Krishna in that sense. A little bit more, actually, slightly later on in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavatam Canto 3, 6, 4, Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada writes, "The Virat Rupa or Vishwarup is a gigantic universal form of the Lord, which is very much appreciated by the impersonalist. It is not an eternal form of the Lord. It is manifest by the supreme will of the Lord after the ingredients of material creation. Lord Krishna exhibited this Virat or Vishwarup to Arjuna just to convince the impersonalists that he is the original personality of Godhead. The Virat Rup is not an eternal form exhibited as in the spiritual sky. It is a material manifestation of the Lord." So in other words, it's basically saying, confirming what I just said. But there's so much more in these verses, because Sukadeva Goswami has been also asked to speak on time and creation. So we've dealt with the Lord's relationship with the universe. Krishna's kind of aloof from it. So is Vishnu, actually. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva do kind of get more involved, let's say. Just like you imagine there's a company, a corporate company somewhere in Wall Street or London somewhere. And you have the guy at the top, the CEO, or someone who's even above that, Mark Zuckerberg, or I don't know, something like that. He's not directly involved on the shop floor, so to speak. You won't find Mark Zuckerberg working in, I don't know, whatever, directly involved, because he's too powerful in a sense, because he's the origin. It's a very bad example, but you know what I mean. So Krishna is responsible for the material manifestation, but you have these creators and sub-creators that are ultimately designated, let's say, lower down in the hierarchy, but they are designated to deal with us. Even us, we have a little bit of power. We may have a pet dog. We shouldn't really have dogs, but anyway. Or a scientist in a laboratory may have a petri dish where he's experimenting with various bacteria or something like that. That's my science. That's as far as I remember my science lessons at school. Little petri dish. Or we may have a little bit of controlling, or we have a little bit of control over our back garden, or whatever it is. But actually, that's very small. But we are miniature controllers. But there's demigods that are above us in the universe who have greater control. Indra, Vayu, Surya, much greater control. Greater control than them is Lord Brahma. Where does Lord Brahma come from? The navel, of course, of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So like that. So let's learn a little bit here. Bhagavatam 2.10.46 purport, which is continuing from the last text that we're doing today, number 12. Prabhupada is writing here about kalpas. In the Maha Kalpa, the Lord assumes the first Purush incarnation as Karana Dakshai Vishnu with all the potencies of the Mattattva and the 16 principles of creative matter and instruments. And all of them are products of Mahat, or materialistic ego. Mahat-tattva, meaning illusion, that what is not, or also ego. The first element in this universe, actually, before the earth was created, and all the sound, and earth, water, fire, air, ether, and so forth, was ego. So it gives you an idea of what to expect in the living entities in this universe. Ego. Ego is the most... the fundamental subtle element. It's why we're here. So therefore, the ego is most difficult to control. Well, the mind is difficult to control, but connected to that, of course, is ego. Ego basically means... It's not just about wanting to receive gratification or glorification or to be the center of attention. In a more subtle way, ego means I want to be separate from Krishna. I want to be identifiable as I am Krishna's competitor, in a sense. That's what ego is. Krishna is the original. Krishna is the origin of all. Krishna is the center of everything. He's in one. You know, he's the original person, the original, the supreme self, and we are miniature ones. And if we deny that, or we act in denial of that fact, then we are acting upon our ego ultimately. And it pervades the universe from the very beginning. All living entities have their little, even the dog barking, down the street. He's got ego. He's protecting his territory, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. All animals have it. Human beings, of course, we have it too, albeit slightly more subtle. Actually, these days it's not even subtle, is it? Let's continue with Prabhupada's purport. The creation of Brahma in each day is his life. Is called kalpa, a kalpa. In other words, just one day to him. Because as you go up in the universe, as you go to the higher ranks, to the higher corporate ranks, if you like, of the universe, time is experienced differently by different levels of gods and demigods. So, i.e., a day to Lord Brahma, who is at the top, if you like, of the universe, of this universe, creator, is a day for him. For us, is something in the region of 4.32 billion Earth years. Talk about relativity. So those demigods that are in between, or for example, you have Gandharvas or Kiranas, or of course some of the controlling demigods, their experience of time is somewhere in between. In some of the planets between the Earth and Brahmaloka. So this is a great example of relative time experience. Just like, I see an insect. That insect may last a few hours. But to him, that's a lifetime. So it's relative to consciousness as well. What is time? Time is something that's experienced by a conscious entity. And we divide it up into days and nights, and we even add seconds and milliseconds. The purport continues. In the upper planetary system, the duration of one complete day and night is equal to one complete year of this Earth. This is accepted even in the modern scientist, by the modern scientist, and attested by the astronauts. What that's saying is NASA sends up astronauts into space or to the International Space Station. She said, "Ah, the Gokulan and the Kijai, Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Kijai, Shishi Gornitai, Kijai." So Prabhupada here is picking up on a modern example where astronauts are sent into the space station or whatever, they go around the Earth a few times, and they actually experience time differently to us. For example, for them, you get a watch, maybe a day goes by, they come back, they find that 2 days has gone by on the Earth, simply by leaving the atmosphere of the Earth, which is fascinating. So everything we're experiencing in our sense, we are conditioned not only by our bodies, our senses, but we're conditioned by the planet that we're living on. This planet is basically accommodating our karma. It is this place that we are, which is suitable for living entities in bodies like ours, not just in terms of space, but in terms of time. Prabhupada continues, similarly, in the region of still higher planetary systems, the duration of day and night is still greater than in the heavenly planets. The four yugas are calculated in terms of the heavenly calendars and accordingly are 12,000 years in terms of the heavenly planets. This is called a Divya Yuga, and 1,000 Divya Yugas make one day of Brahma. So Divya Yuga, for those who are familiar, of course, is the four yugas. One Divya Yuga includes Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. Or if you want to be smart, Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, which means three, and Kali Yuga. But of course, most yuga cycles, the Treta comes third. Three. But in this particular yuga cycle, Dwapara Yuga comes third. It happens in nature, doesn't it? Because Krishna had to come. So we're in a special, quite unique yuga cycle, one could say. And each yuga cycle is 4.32 million years as experienced on the Earth. Prabhupada here, however, is saying in higher planets, it's not so long. But these yuga cycles is something which is experienced not just on the Earth, but in other planets as well, higher planets as well. In other words, I think someone was asking this once in a class. I can't remember who asked who, but do the higher planets do they have a Kali Yuga? And the answer is yes, they have. Got Antaranga Prabhu's agreeing, so I know I'm on the right track. So other planets also have a Kali Yuga and a Satya Yuga, but it's relative to the standard of living on their respective planet. So let's say, for example, Gandhava or some celestial being, and their Kali Yuga may just be 1,000 years or something like that. But and for them, it won't be as bad as it is here, because their overall standard of living is higher. Just like if a Hollywood star has a bad day, he may lose his million-dollar mansion. But that's as far as it's going to go. But do you see what I mean? In other words, they may have to relatively step down a bit. But then when the Satya Yuga comes, they get it back. So similarly, humankind, we have a very hard time on the Earth. We're more susceptible, more vulnerable, if you like, to the yuga cycle system. Since the Vedic times, actually, since the times of before the Mahabharata period, actually, the degradation spiritually and also in some ways materially has gone very rapidly over the last 5,000 or 6,000 years. And heaven knows what it's going to be like at the end of this Kali Yuga. Just chant, that's what I would do. So I love this purport, so I'm going to continue with it. Prabhupada writes, the 30 kalpas of Brahma each have a name based on significant events that occurred during that kalpa. So what we find in the Puranas is actually a list of different kalpas. So they actually got, we actually have an idea, and they're named according to the highlight of what happened in that day of Brahma. So we know that there's creation going on in this month, as it were. We have a month of Brahma tracked. So, kalpas are Brahma's days only, and he has to live months and years, up to 100 of his years. So we can just imagine how many creations there are in just a kalpa. Creations and sub-creations. Remember, at the end of each Dipayuga, there's a partial annihilation of mankind and the earth. At the end of Kali Yuga, everything will be more or less finished. Kalki Avatar will come and finish whoever's off. And the demigods come to the earth and they reboot it. They reboot it with a new piece of software. The demigods basically start replenishing the earth again after humankind has basically ruined everything. And we will be, well, it'll be pretty bad. Just, I wouldn't recommend we keep taking birth till we're there. But anyway, it will be pretty bad. However, then there are vikalpas, which are generated by the breathing of Mahavishnu, as stated in the Brahma Samhita. The Brahmas live only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu. And the one life, by our calculation, as I mentioned, what the universe lasts for about 100 of Brahma's years, which is 311 trillion, 40 billion Earth years. Give or take a few years here and there. That's how we experience it on this Earth. The Earth wouldn't even last that long. Yet, to Mahavishnu, to Brahma, it's 100 years, a lifetime for him. Even him, it's quite long, in a sense. But to Mahavishnu, what is it? How insignificant are we? What a challenge is that to our ego? No matter how famous we are, whether we're Julius Caesar, or whether we're some dictator from the past, or a dictator from the future, or a famous actor, or singer, or politician, or football player, even. Whatever we are, it is all very insignificant when compared with the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. We are not, I was going to say we're like atoms at Krishna's lotus feet, but actually we're like subatomic particles, actually, when you really analyze the time periods of this, and that is also related to space. Prabhupada finishes that purport by saying that all these are due to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for no one else is the master of all creation. So Prabhupada here is reminding the reader, okay, you've got Brahma, you've got Lord Shiva, they've all got roles when it comes to the universe, and then of course we've got Vishnu as the maintainer, but the original Vishnu, the origin of Vishnu, the origin of Mahavishnu, of course, is the four-armed Narayan forms, but the supreme planet in the spiritual sky is Krishna Loka, or Goloka Vrindavan, the origin of all Vaikuntha planets and all Narayan forms. So that's wonderful to think about these things. Of course, a little bit more gruesome detail. There's yuga cycle, times that by 71, and you get one manvantara. That would be a lifetime of an Indra, actually, or a Manu, like Vaishvata Manu, or Swayambhava Manu, or Uttara Manu, different Manus. 14 Manus, that would make one day, one kalpa of Lord Brahma. So incredible, really. So sometimes we read about Lord Indra, don't we? Or we read about Manu. But actually, that's okay, we can read about Indra. But actually, the thing is, Indra is a post, Manu is a post. It's like a president or GBC or a kind of a prime minister or a president. There were different people take that role on as Lord Brahma's day proceeds. Like that. And there were many Lord Brahmas. Brahma is also a post. You know, they've got, I'm a Brahma, which Brahma are you? I've got 20 heads, I've got a million, you know. It's a post. But they're in charge, or they're creating different universes of different sizes. And our universe is actually a very small one in comparison with the other universes that come out of the pores of Mahavishnu. So, talking about small, yes indeed, I would say. But I just want to finish off in the last 5-10 minutes, actually, just to kind of add that the purpose of the Puranas is for spiritual progression. Nevertheless, encoded within the Puranas is not just this kind of spiritual science and relative time and space we've been talking about, but even science which is recognizable and respectable, or would be respected by scientists of today. It describes, for example, I can't remember the verse, but the description of the development of the embryo within the womb, for example. So that's there, a simple scientific explanation. But ultimately, the aim is spiritual. I'd just like to kind of mention on that subject when it comes to planetary systems, some of the work of Sadaputta Babu, who was a founder, charter member of the Bhaktivedanta Institute in the mid-1970s. He tried to address this, particularly focusing on the fifth canto, but also the third canto and second canto, which talks a lot about creation, and trying to use that as a tool also to preach to scientists, really, or modern astronomers and so forth. And Drutakarma Prabhu, Michael Cramer, who's also done work in that regard, although more closely related to the Yuga cycles and the age of modern man. Of course, given the Yuga cycles we've been talking about, it's very different from the theory of evolution, which suggests that the further you go back in time, the more primitive you get. And now we're at the pinnacle of creation, and now we're fantastic. Not. In some ways, actually, after this 10,000-year golden age, actually, it's going to be devolution. To the point where I mentioned before, it gets so bad, Kalki Avatar will have to come, wipe everyone off, and they'll have to start again. So from the point of view of the demigods, the Earth is actually going through a gradual devolution. I mean, there may be ups and downs, you know, but generally, that's the trend. Such is the cycle of birth and death. But to say that today, of course, Sadaputta Prabhu is no longer with us, but his books are kind of like a legacy. And today, the branch of the Bhaktivedanta Institute called the Bhaktivedanta Institute of Higher Studies, the BHIHS, discusses these things, not just Prabhupada's books, but other books as well being published by devotees on Vedic cosmology. And there are three, just to finish off here, there are basically like three different schools that tend to come out, I would say. I mean, more or less, can categorize them to three schools. One is which is more popular in India, but also certain devotees as well, say, what we should be presenting these things as they are, without the need, let's say, to connect it with modern science. So, for example, you know, whatever the Bhagavatam says, that's the literal truth. There you go. Take it or leave it. We don't care. If it says the universe is only 4 billion miles across, then it's 4 billion miles across. There you are. That's it. End of story. And that is a respectable thing, because we shouldn't really be trying to bring the Bhagavatam and everything and try and bring it under the umbrella of modern science. However, the other school of thought, which I would say could be represented by some of the books of Sadaputta Babu, is trying to form bridges between the two, trying to form collaborations. For example, he is looking at history, looking at what the scientists are saying, looking at the Bhagavatam and seeing if there are things in common. And remarkably, there are. He, for example, points out mathematically and with references to the fifth canto, how his theory, at least, I'm not saying what's what, obviously, you know, it's all under, is that the concentric circles that is described in as Bhumandala matches the solar system in terms of size and distance and the planets, which is remarkable. These things are only known really relatively in the last few centuries in Europe, and yet encoded in the Bhagavatam. When it was first spoken, okay, maybe been written down later, but when it was first spoken 5,000 years ago, the same things were known, but it's presented in a different way because it's a different culture. Ultimately, the purpose, as I mentioned, of the Puranas is a devotional one. However, the fact that it's laced with profound scientific knowledge, backed up, I think, by the depth of the spiritual aspect of the scriptures and ancient architecture, that you find in India and so forth, gives strength to the knowledge that there was an ancient wisdom and ancient science that has been somehow lost over thousands of years. We in ISKCON are part of a revivalist movement, in a sense. And there is a revival of this greater sense of India's true heritage that is undergoing now in India. And ISKCON appears to be a positive part of that, where through colonization, rule of foreign powers, but also India's own gradual decline because of the Vedic decline, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, often these things have been dismissed as mythology or unrealistic. How can a human being live for thousands of millions of years? What's scientific about that? Yet, as I've been describing, what the Bhagavatam is telling us is that there's a whole universe out there where time is experienced differently, where there are beings, demigods and upper devas and whatnot, with powers and far beyond our understanding. But finally, there's a third school of thought, the Satipputta one, the literalist one, and another one as well, which has come out of devotees such as Rasiraj and Rishiraj, who were educated in Juhu, Bombay, which is kind of an interesting one. And it's more to do with the understanding of semantics. I won't go into that, but it's the idea of forming a bridge between science and the scriptures as well, but understanding the use, for example, of metaphor and the multi-use of, or multi-interpretations, what's the word I'm looking for? Multi-dimension is a good, very good word. I'm trying to think of the fact that Sanskrit words can have multiple meanings, and each meaning is valid according to the context of the word. That's a good word. It's a very long word, too long for me to know, but there you go, very good. So you've got this magic. In other words, you've got more than one meaning in a verse. So you get to the Bhagavatam, for example, fifth canto, and there's different meanings that can come out of it within the same verse, multiple meanings, but each meaning is true. Sukadeva Goswami had just a few days to tell Maharaj Pariksit all about Vedic cosmology. He just had a few, Pariksit had just a few days to live, of course. Geniusly, what we get in the Bhagavatam is an immense amount of information that's condensed. You know, even the Ramayana appears, but the essence of Ramayana, the creme de la creme of Mahabharata Ramayana, and including Vedic cosmology, is all in the Bhagavatam, but it's in a summary form. If you want more detail, you turn to Mahabharata or Ramayana or something like that. But everything you need to know, the creme de la creme of the Vedas, Vedanta Sutra, which in itself is the creme de la creme of the Vedas, is there. So it gives you an idea, I think, of a kind of almost like a kind of a context. And also, finally, it gives you an idea of the greatness of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the greatness of what Srila Prabhupada has given us. It is barely comprehensible when you think about it. But the more you do think about it and attempt to comprehend it, the more of a jewel you realize the Bhagavatam really is. So, yes, I think I'll stop there. I think we've covered quite a lot of ground. Is your question about that? I was speaking too quickly. No. Okay, questions then, please. Or comments. Yeah.
The Treta Yuga is the third one.
Yes.
But in this Divya Yuga,
yeah,
the Treta Yuga is the second one.
Yeah.
But what about the characteristics of the Treta Yuga and the Dvapara Yuga?
Do
the Dvapara Yuga in this Divya Yuga appear before the Treta Yuga was?
I think I understand what you mean. Each Yuga has a... let's see if I understand your question. Each Yuga, one aspect of each Yuga, is it a different process of God realization is best, they get the best results from different yugas. So obviously Satya Yuga, it's going to be meditation and so forth, and you know, where yogis are able to basically slow down their breathing to virtually not breathing at all. this advanced Ashtanga yoga, meditating for thousands of years. They had superior bodies to ours. And that is the same for every Satya Yuga in each Divya Yuga cycle. The Treta Yuga, it's always about elaborate sacrifices. Dwapara Yuga, of course, is elaborate deity worship. Kali Yuga, of course, is the holy name. So in other Yuga cycles, other Divya Yugas, when Treta was third, it still kept the characteristic that it was sacrifice. This is my point. Why, in this Yuga cycle, it's the other way around, is something which I'm going to throw out to... Can anyone help me with that? I believe it's to do with the fact that Krishna appears in this Yuga cycle, where he didn't appear, say, in the previous one. Does anyone know any more about that? Prabhu? Antaranga Prabhu is going to shed some light on this subject.
Now, basically, they said in the Bhagavatam that different yugas, different manifestations, different colors are coming.
Yeah.
So, for instance, right, there's Rakta, Shukla, Shyama, and in the age of Kali, it's actually said it's Shyama. So that's why when Krishna appears, they kind of swapped, because he only can come in a certain age, which is... The significance is the color.
It's the color which defines. So it's not just a process of God realization, but there's also color associated.
Color. So, yeah, that's basically it.
And also Krishna, remember another thing as well. Bhagavatam was spoken not just for the benefit of Maharaj Parikshit, or Bhagavad Gita was spoken not just for the benefit of Arjuna, but it's for the benefit of us guys in the Kali Yuga. So Krishna's appearing in his blackish form, actually, just before the Kali Yuga. In fact, the Kali Yuga started when Lord Krishna left this planet. Okay, so just at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, he began. So again, another sign of our fortune.
Devolution coming.
Right, yes. Right.
So how can Dwapara Yuga, who is supposed to be more corrupt, more devoluted, appear second, and then third one, which is supposed to be...
As I understand it, that's because in other Dipva Yugas, Treta Yuga would be more corrupt than Dwapara Yuga. Because it's coming after. Because the idea, you imagine, at the beginning of every Satya Yuga, you have demigods, Manus, like in our city, which Ikshvaku Manu, for example, was the father of mankind of this Yuga cycle, right? They come down, they replenish the earth, they sort it out. You know, how they do that, I don't know, but they turn it from a desert to a virtually paradise. And then as time goes by, you know, the souls, I guess, that are kind of attached to the earth or keep taking birth again, who are relatively more conditioned, continue doing that to the point where you get to the next yuga. So naturally, those that are more advanced go back home, back to Godhead, or take birth in the heavenly planets. But as we're in middle planet, it's not as desirable, let's say, materially. So those that get stuck here, it's like, let's say, for example, you go back home, back to Godhead in this life, which I hope you do, I'm sure you will. So you're not going to take birth, you're not going to be further populating Kali Yuga as it goes by. The more conditioned souls, the ones that don't care about God, who are just kind of, you know, they're going to be taking, unfortunately, they're going to be taking birth again and again and again, thus contributing to the devolution.
Okay, so it only keeps certain characteristics then. And
As I understand it, but I'm subject to correction on that.
Thank you.
Can we give some of the people a chance? Maybe one or two of the other ladies behind you, I think, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for the class. It was really mind-blowing. I lost you quite a few times. I mean, because of all these yugas. And I have a different... It's not a technical question. I haven't come across in Shastra, because I don't know Shastra that well. Do you maybe know if there is anywhere explained where a person is born in some other universe apart from our small... four-headed
right.
Brahma leading the universe. And do they also, what's their ways of getting purified and getting qualified, going back to God.
Right. So
do you know if there is
what's going on in other universes, basically?
Yes, regarding the progressing of the person being purified and souls going.
What
back
is their
to
process
Krishna.
Of God realization in other universes? Yes. Well, first of all, there's a jolly lot of them. So I'm sure that they are kind of different and similar at the same time. Just like there's a lot of roads and cars, and there are a lot of Lord Brahmas, but they're similar as well. Just like a car has a certain design, but it's roughly most have four wheels, most have a steering wheel, all have a steering wheel, because you need that. It's a practical application. So there's only a certain amount of variation you can have within the three modes of material nature, which applies to all universes. What do we know about other universes? We know that there's a Lord Brahma, that's a creator of them. We know that most other universes are larger physically, I think, than this one. Therefore, we can assume maybe they have greater population. And we know there's demigods in them. But that's all we kind of know. But we also know that Krishna also takes birth, just like he did on the earth 5,000 years ago. Krishna has a roadshow. He's exhibiting his pastimes in different universes. So as now, so to speak, talk about relative time, now, inverted commas, he's in another universe performing his leela. So therefore, we can assume that there's populations there, that there's Earth-life planets, there's, you know, but we don't know if there's 14 planetary divisions, systems, it may be more, it may be less. I don't know, I've never been there. You know. But what we can say is that there's a sense of uniformity, there's a sense, logically there's a sense of similarity.
So you're saying that everyone in any universe gets the opportunity as we do, even though those universes are like thousands, maybe thousands of times larger.
I don't know. You know what I mean? It's tempting to kind of go into that, the different kind of processes. Are they chanting Hare Krishna in other universes? But I just simply don't know the answer to that. I think Adi Guru was going to shed some light on it. Go on, Prabhu.
The same.
Yeah.
There's spirit souls. There's karma.
Yeah.
There's the Vedas. All the same.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah, it's similar, yeah.
It's not spirit souls, and they don't need to purify themselves in different processes. They're all the same. The Vedas are eternal for all the human processes. They don't have a different Veda.
What we can say, is obviously the Vedas, the different sages, or the details are going to be different. You know, the geography is going to be different, and all of that stuff. But just like vehicles, cars are more or less the same everywhere you go.
Eating.
Yeah. And the three modes of material nature also apply, you know, goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, Radha Sangha, sorry, yes, Radha Sangha. Okay, in terms of the creation of the universe, we understand that the, as also described in Prabhupada's purpose, the ego comes before the mind. Mahatattva, you know, it's basically solid ego, if you like. At one point, there was just ego, and it condenses into intelligence, and intelligence condenses into the mind. This is what we read about the concentric circles, if you like, around the universe. There's different layers. First of all, there's the gross layers, but then there's the subtle layers. So the difference is we can understand that the ego is ultimately the origin of the mind. Just like earth, water comes before earth. In a sense, because but Earth is more dense. So therefore, the mind must be denser than the ego. Yeah, I hope that. I don't know your name? Okay, hi. Do your question, you can do yours, and then I think we'll finish. Okay, go on.
Hi. I've been told I'm known to ask difficult questions, and this is a pretty head-cracking question, but I hope.
Well, let's see. I may not be able to answer it.
Yes. So you said that time is related. Your experience of time is related to your consciousness.
To some degree, yeah.
And because consciousness is like the symptom of the spirit soul, which is a superior nature of the eternal Lord, which means that the nature of your soul, or rather consciousness, is that it should experience eternity. rather than time.
Well, the truth in that is that someone who's more spiritually advanced is obviously going, you know, 1 second to them is obviously 1 second, you know, if someone's a yogi or someone's an advanced acharya. But I think that spiritual people would have a slightly different way of dealing with time.
I think the experience of time must be also different. But my question actually was that, so does that mean that time is experienced by mind, intelligence, and ego, by your sort of material coverings? Because they must exist for you to experience time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it must be. The answer to that is yes. I guess so. What I would say is that we are, whilst we have these bodies, these bodies, we consist of all the five elements, but there's also, we have our ego, we have our mind, you know, we have our intelligence. So it's all condensed, if you like, into our bodies. Whilst we have these bodies, even if someone is very spiritually advanced, but they're in these bodies, you've still got to go by, act within certain laws. You know?
Yeah.
And I guess, chance. Okay, what we'll do, we'll finish off, because I've actually got to go to a meeting in 15 minutes as well, so. Okay, one final question, I think.
Thank you very much. Regarding the point we were discussing before about if someone can go to another universe that was who's not here anymore, but we know from the scripture that for a devotee, according to their advancement, if they are completely purified, they will go to another universe where Krishna has his transcendental roadshow. And he will be born in the womb of a gopi. So therefore, before they go back to the spiritual world, they have to be in the material
trained
world
up.
To be trained.
Yeah.
So then that also maybe we can consider.
That's interesting. Yeah, in other words, it also backs up the point that Krishna's manifestation of his transcendental leader is always going on in one universe or another. And like you said, I've heard about that as well. That's quite some advanced literature, actually, that you got that from. But the soul, yeah, gets trained up, or sometimes it's Chaitanya Leela as well, and then they go to the Vaikuntha afterwards. Which also backs up the fact, it kind of backs up the point that there's similarity, in a sense, between the different universes. Krishna, Vishnu, they have you just depicted as having humanoid forms, you know, two arms, two legs, and a head. And we can assume Narad Muni goes to these other universes as well. Krishna tours on his kind of his rock tour, if you like, his world tour. And so therefore we can assume there are humanoid forms not dissimilar to ourselves in other universes as well. And I know that Adigarupa agrees. Throughout the universe. But what about other universes? It's roughly, yeah, it's roughly the same. I don't know. I mean, we have to be honest. We don't. We only know what we know. We can't really speculate, you know.
In the other universes, they eat with their mouth.
Well, Krishna can. Yeah. Krishna can eat with his eyes.
I don't think they eat with their ears. They've got food in their fingers in other universes. I think it's the same.
Similar. I mean, even on this earth, within different cultures and different periods of time, that you see, you know, people dressed differently. And if you go to the Roman times and you're dressed in a suit and tie, you know, you'd probably be stoned or something. You know, you'd be, you know, they'd think you're very strange. They did. So similar and different. The cultures would have been different, I think, you know. I think Daddy Guru Prabhu was referring to human-like forms rather than plants and so forth. Anyway, so maybe you can take birth in another universe and you can come back and tell us all about it. Thank you, yeah. But in Krishna Leela, of course. Then I'd definitely like to hear more details. Thank you. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.